Now, stay tuned for Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, a fun and informative green talk radio show that features guests from all over the country who talk about how living green can improve your lifestyle and be fun. Visit Mrs. Green's website, www.mrsgreensworld.com, for more information about her guests.
Hello, Tucson. Hello, world. Happy last Saturday in August. It's getting a little bit cooler. There's hope. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Another great Saturday with our guests, and this probably will be a wacky, fun, interrupting each other. Let's get as much information out there as we can. We have two very bright minds of the future, young people that are creating things that I don't even know how to articulate, and that's the truth. Lon Huber and Mark Scholin from the University of Arizona, and even though I swore I wasn't going to say this on air, Mark just graduated from the University of Arizona. So in his heart, he's a wildcat, but his PhD program is being conducted up the road a little bit in our sister city, Phoenix, so it's okay. Can you guys just say hello for me? Okay, laughter. Okay, this is going to be a spotlight on sustainability, and for as much laughter as there is, they're doing some things that are really important and on purpose. They are leaders, and I am really happy to have them here today. So we will have fun. Please remember, we welcome questions, 520-880-5678. And if you're calling in with a question, all I ask is, ask the question. That's great. This show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson, and I have just been saying that one sentence, but now I want to say, this is a time. They have great summer values and the best possible ownership experience at Chapman Tucson. I can attest to that. I sit in on some of their meetings, and their customer satisfaction rate is over the top, which really matters just about as much as anything. And did I mention the part about tell them Mrs. Green sent you? Because that would be so good. And also the Fairfax companies, thank you so much, both of you, great corporations, for your support of Mrs. Green. Again, call in number 520-880-5678. I do want to repeat that we are having Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge. You can check that out by visiting my website, mrsgreensworld.com. The voting actually starts on September 7th. There are seven or eight companies that have already submitted, and I know of about three or four more. So even though you can't vote yet, you can go in and look and see who you are going to vote for, who is going to win Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge. And the entries are diverse and wonderful, and we are thrilled with the response already. Okay, Labor Day next weekend. Labor Day is late this year, but there is going to be a Sun Power festival at the Tucson Children's Museum. There'll be lots of fun activities for the little kids and the big kids alike. It's sponsored by TEP Bright Solutions. Please come and find Mrs. Green's table. We have some great fun giveaways. We love it when you come to say hi. And again, details are on my website on the event section, mrsgreensworld.com. And I haven't mentioned Iskashita, because I say it wrong every time on the radio for quite a while, but it's the Refugee Harvesting Network, and the show gets so full, but this time I really have to take a little time to do a shout-out because it's an unbelievable organization. They literally, they feed the hungry. They engage communities in change and in possibility. And here's a couple of numbers. The University of Arizona Farms contributed tens of thousands of hydroponic tomatoes. And then 2 weeks later, are you ready? 7 million grapes. So they're harvesting tomatoes and grapes, peaches, pears, apricots, and more. And they are really doing things with it instead of wasting the food and having it rot on the ground. And, again, you can always contact Mrs. Green's World to find out the contact information for them. But they're a great program. And if you have fruit that you can't pick or that you can't eat enough of, they'll come to your home, to your yard, and harvest it. They have lots of volunteer opportunities. And I just thought it's about time I gave them another shout-out because Barbara, who's their director, I don't think she sleeps. I'm barely kidding. Okay, let's go on to the show. How about we start with a little bit about your backgrounds? Lon, why don't you start?
Oh, sure. But first, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. So currently, I'm pursuing a master's degree in business administration at the University of Arizona. I serve as a student representative on the president's campus sustainability team. I'm also the chair of the UA SAGE Fund, which is an organization that provides seed money for campus sustainability projects. I was the co-founder of ASUA Students for Sustainability, which is actually one of the largest campus sustainability internship programs in the country. So we have over 50 student interns working on campus trying to make it more sustainable.
So do you sleep?
A little bit. I get, you know, every now and again, you know, that's what Sunday's for.
Yeah.
I'm also an advisory board member for Dayway Careers, which is a national organization aimed at placing young people in clean energy careers. Recently, I've actually become a founding board member for something called the Southern Arizona Green Chamber of Commerce. So it's a new and exciting organization here in Tucson. A little background, I worked in Washington, D.C. as a Congressional Solar Energy Fellow and as a policy advisor for candidates seeking public office in Arizona. And I got my public policy and management degree from the U not too long ago, and I currently work for Technicians for Sustainability, which is a local solar installation and water harvesting company.
I am familiar with them. They're going to be on the show. Kevin is scheduled for a show. I'm not sure when because I don't look ahead too much. I'm focusing right on you. It's all about you. Let's talk a little bit about the Students for Sustainability.
Sure.
What was your impetus for starting that? And explain a little bit more about what that encompasses, what
sure.
it entails, because that's huge. And when did you start that?
Oh, gosh. It's 2.5 years ago, I'd say. So
okay.
When I got to campus as a freshman, all the environmental groups and clubs, they were fragmented, operating in their own silos. There is no coordination, minimal coordination. And so myself and one other student, Leslie Ash, we got together and we used the student government as the vehicle to form a central organization that would essentially organize and coordinate campus sustainability activities. And so basically what we tried to do is create a mechanism to establish a consistent, you know, pipeline of young leaders that would basically try to make the campus their own laboratory almost and make it more sustainable and have the opportunity to take leadership positions within the organization.
So with something so vast, I mean, and I get it because I interface a lot with the University of Arizona, and I call it the city of the University of Arizona because there are so many things going on, and it's huge. It's absolutely massive. So the coordination of effort, what a noble goal. How do you start a focus? Like, how do you even begin when it's something so big?
Right.
Did you start with student housing? Did you start with practices at the food court? Where was your – how do you narrow it down?
See, that's what I love. It's almost like its own city. So here it is. You know, students are here. You know, they're here for 4 years, and they have almost like this microcosm of the real world where they can try to make a difference. And it's so vast that – whatever a student's passion, it's most likely they'll be able to carry that out and try to make whatever that area is better. So, for instance, you know, if they're interested in recycling, they can get involved in that. Composting, you know, solar energy, energy efficiency, you name it. So, you know, it really – we don't have necessarily, a list that says, oh, hey, we should hit on this. We more say,
awesome.
Hey, what's your passion? Lead a team of students, and let's see if we can get something done.
And you, they are empowered to go on and do it, make the
change.
Completely
bottoms up.
I believe that's what happens.
Bottom up. Yeah.
Stay tuned. Lots more interesting information with Lon Huber and Mark Scholin, recent graduates of the University of Arizona and changing the world. We'll be right back.
790KNST.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is indeed 790 News Talk 790. News Talk 790 KNST. Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, the voice of green in Tucson and around the world. In studio guests today, I call them the bright minds of the future. They are what give me such hope for possibility and change in so many areas of what's going on in our world. The sky is not falling because we have people like this. So we have Lon Huber and Mark Scholin. And we were talking about Students for Sustainability. So that is, I think, a great segue. What has been accomplished? There's lots of things going on at the University of Arizona. Everybody got to pick their own focus area, use their strengths and their passion.
Well, we're going to have a composting vessel come online soon. We've got organic gardening going on. We raised money for future projects recently. We carried out great outreach events, Earth Day 2010. And I think one of the shining examples is probably a solar dorm project that's currently underway. And Mark here, he was one of the first students going through, you know, that went through the pipeline of,
right.
of the campus sustainability.
Prototype organization.
Yeah, and so, you know, he was the project manager of the Solar Dorm Initiative, and, I you know, you can speak onto this, you know,
Absolutely.
Where it is and everything.
That's huge. That's perfect.
Absolutely.
So let's hear from the person that made something really happen in a project.
All right, Mrs. Green. Well, it's a pleasure to be on, first of all, first and foremost. Probably good if I just give a really quick primer about where I come from, you know, my background and how my interests really
People
correlate
love to know
well.
That. Like, how did you get from here to there?
Sure thing. All
from
right.
From there to here, I think it is.
All right. Well, you know, you mentioned at the top of the show, I did graduate this past May from the U of A. I got my BS in chemical engineering. And so as an engineer, we learn a lot about what it takes to take something from the drawing board and actually implement it into the real world so people can benefit from it in a number of ways.
The practical application of science.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what engineering is all about, at least in my mind. So, you know, I joined Lawn's AS2A sustainability group as a junior. At the time, I was seeking out better ways to expand on my experiences and also to lend my knowledge to actually
right.
to you know, make a direct impact on my community, campus community. So at that time, ASUA Sustainability had just started forming. It was a small group. There were, what, 8 or 10 people at the time. We were the steering committee, so to speak, and we all had our different specialties and different interests that that we then, you know, we doled out responsibilities. And for me, I was tasked with being the project manager for our solar initiative, because clearly with sustainability, a big part of that is energy and clean energy, sustainable energy. So given my background as an engineer, I was best suited to take on that responsibility.
And were you excited about it? Was it an area
Absolutely.
Of interest to you to learn about that? Because being a chemical engineer,
sure
solar,
thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, one of my big focuses that I've always had either through middle school, high school, you know, throughout my entire life, really, is being able to develop better ways for our society to operate in a more sustainable way, whether that be through energy production or water treatment or waste disposal. There's just so much room for advancement there and optimization. And that's what I hope to do is a kind of a long-standing career goal. But in any case, you know, back to this solar dorm initiative that we developed here. So I'm the project manager, and I led until my graduation a team of around 8 to 10 people, all from a wide, wide variety of backgrounds, some science, some marketing, some were more, you know, more of a social aspect and, you know, planning, all that kind of thing. So what we've been doing is we started from scratch, from ground zero. So we, you know, we interfaced with companies. We talked with ResLife very heavily. ResLife has played a huge role for us in implementing solar onto campus residence halls. In fact, we hope to get our first system in place by the end of the year.
Which is really great.
Absolutely.
Is it on a new dorm or on an existing dorm?
Yeah, it's going to be on one of the newer ones on Highland.
Okay.
There's a row there. Posada San Pedro
okay.
is the target dorm. And this is a huge collaboration, not with just students, but we've branched out and gotten help from a huge, huge number of organizations. Lawn has played a huge role in helping be that interface between students and either faculty or even the private sector.
Which is huge. I mean, that's the cooperative.
Absolutely. You know, as students, there's a great advantage that we have in that when trying to do projects like this is that we have the ability to transcend organizational barriers, so to speak. There's no kind of command chain that we have to adhere to strictly. But at the same time, it is more difficult to actually, you know, to implement actual changes when we're trying to talk with these higher-ups either in the university or in the private sector to actually get these installations
right,
to happen.
Right.
So,
well, you know, one of the main hurdles, and this is what we tried to overcome, is, you know, students are only here for a short amount of time.
Right.
And
yep.
and right when you get them caught up to speed and involved, they graduate.
So, exactly.
So, you know, my goal was...
And we have that case right here with
exactly.
me. I mean,
you know, trying to build institutional memory so that when they're gone, other students can just pick right up. And
the project keeps going, the people
exactly,
will change.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And
it's
so...
It's sustainable. How clever is
exactly.
that?
Exactly. And, you know, one of the big goals that we have as an overarching organization, this Students for Sustainability, housed at the U of A, is to have a really great infrastructure in place so new people can just read a set of documentation or just talk with a key one or two people and get caught up to speed, you know, just like that, and just hop right on board, make meaningful contributions from the get-go.
Now, I have to interject here. The way I have known Lon and in the sustainability community out there in this world, people know him. He's made an impact. People listen. There's a lot of respect for him. And when I met you, it was at Biosphere 2, and Lon brought me over there, and there was some type of, I called it, it's a very scientific term I use, a solar contraption. And you guys...
Very descriptive.
It is. It is. It was like, what the heck is this? But... From what I understand, you helped to create that solar contraption. Is that to build it and think it up and, you know,
whatever.
So tell
right.
us about,
Absolutely.
Can you just tell us a little bit about that? Because that's the extent and breadth and width of creating new ideas and how to implement them and make it work.
Sure thing. Well, you know, this project that you're referring to, we call it a solar cogeneration system.
That's why I forgot the name.
Right. And so just in a very general sense, during the hottest parts of the day, of any given day, PV solar panels, you know, solar
right.
panels that directly produce
right.
electricity, lose some of their electricity generating efficiency.
Because it's too hot.
Correct.
I get that. Yeah.
yeah, correct. So the whole idea behind the system that we developed as part, and then I'll get into the specifics of how that happened after this explanation. But anyway... devising a system to be able to not only cool these panels down closer to their ideal operating temperature, but to also extract that waste heat that we're able to extract from these panels and then use it.
Store it or use
yeah,
it?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
So then what we did is, you know, our mechanism was just to heat water with it. So the cogeneration refers to a dual energy output, that being electricity and also hot water. And what we were trying to do with this specific project, which was actually my senior capstone project to graduate, and, you know, it was on a team of myself and four other guys, and it was actually sponsored through some of the efforts that Lon has been involved with, which we'll get into a bit later on.
Okay. That's really good. I mean, it was
yeah.
creating, and I know with solar, there are a lot of limitations now. I believe
right.
solar, that we have only just begun, and I
sure.
you know talk to
mm-hmm.
people that do see the future, and there will be a lot of these things eliminated because of people like you that are experimenting.
Yeah. And you know what? Another great point to is an addendum to that is not only to make this innovation happen in the lab, but also to bring it out into the general public. So that benefit can be reaped in the near term. And to do that, a huge thing that has to be optimized is cost.
So when we
were designing the system, we were optimizing it for cost. I mean, we made a prototype unit. We had our own limited budget that was provided from a number of sources, from the Department of Chemical Engineering, from the SAGE Fund, which... I suppose mm-hmm. we'll describe shortly. That was the whole idea, is, you know, optimizing it for cost and for total energy conversion.
Yeah.
And, Lon, I want to ask you, so when you're doing this, because you are really part of the public-private sector, even as a student, mm-hmm. you are always interfacing in the business level. Are solar companies, who's interested in funding the kind of work that you're going to do at this level? I understand once you get out, venture capitalists are looking for all kinds of opportunity to fund the next best thing that's going to be the silver bullet.
Right.
Who's interested in the development developmental stage at the university level with what you are doing?
Well, it's actually some private donors. So the SAGE Fund is a nonprofit organization through the UA Foundation. So you can donate, get a tax deduction, and so there's a source of funding that way. And then through students on campus, they are willing to pay money for projects just like Mark's. And really, it's a win-win because that money is invested strategically in projects that have a high rate of return and also advance the education of students. So, Mark's project is a great example of work that takes students out of the classroom and into this laboratory of campus. And basically, the SAGE Fund gives them the tools to design their own systems from the bottom up and try to get it implemented. And they have to deal with all the real world things that when they leave the university, they're going to, like building codes,
exactly.
For instance, standards.
We had, there was so much that we were involved with in producing this cogeneration system that was beyond just doing equations
or
writing
it.
Yeah. Exactly. We talked with so many university personnel about the best way a system like this could actually be implemented on campus, a lot of things like that.
Almost like a real job. I mean, it is.
Oh, yeah.
But seriously, there's a lot of work once you get out there, and it's not the school environment. But you guys have done a lot. We have to talk more about some of the other solar projects. This is News Talk 790 KNST. I am Mrs. Green. Please know that we will take callers 520-880-5678 if you want to talk to these great young minds, and we will be right back.
790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. Happy Saturday. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST, and I am indeed Mrs. Green, and we are indeed with Scott from Legendary World. And Scott, here's what I'm going to do. You have had a journey, and since you do travel, let's carry that metaphor over to your journey of green. You've traveled a ways since we first met, and I remember how you looked at me when I brought up some of that green stuff.
No, definitely. No, it's I think one of the things, I just fell in love with the concept of, Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, because it was for everybody. You'd listen to what you've taught me, and we call the dark greenies,
and they
want to go back to, the wagons
and the
TVs.
And toilet. Not doing that
either. And it's not going to happen, So we have to live in reality and in our times. And it's just been an amazing journey for me, knowing you and then following the show. And, I look back now and the things that I'm going to talk about that I've changed, I can't imagine why we never did them. I mean, even little things like, brushing
happens.
Your teeth. You let the water run,
right.
Or you go to a hotel and you let the water run because it's not yours.
That's right.
Who cares? And it's
still
like
water going down the drain.
It's horrible. So now it's those little things, and I've enjoyed it. And now again, looking back,
you're a farmer's market freak. You're better than I am at it. love it.
It's wonderful. It's amazing. So it's buying local. We all live here in the Tucson Valley. There's incredible produce here.
And it's
beef,
fun to go there.
And it's fun. And I take the kids out there, and
they're learning.
The empanadas, and, we buy tamales, and we sit there, and we eat and walk around, and we just enjoy each other's company, and then we're buying produce together, and they're learning, and they're asking questions. It's really fun because you're there with the farmers. Kids these days don't know where our food comes
from.
That's
right. They think it comes from Safeway.
Yeah, no, it does. And then they say, well, where's the Doritos? It's like, that's not food.
We don't have that here. Right?
It is. It's like, it's been really fun. Or can I have a soda? It's like, no, we don't have any here. You can have lemonade or iced tea.
Stop it drinking soda. And another thing you did, you started, you go to Bookman's. You took all your things there.
Well, in Cartridge World.
Started being at Cartridge World, which is really an unbelievably locally owned franchise. And Scott and Kathy, Kathy and, do all kinds of things. Chuck, Kathy and Chuck do all kinds of things for the community.
Part of it with especially Cartridge World, because again, that's back to our business, is we've tried to, green our business a little bit as well. The perception is, I've talked to a lot of people and they say, well, those cartridges don't work. Then they refill them and stuff, or when they're recycled, and it's, but they do.
I've
been there for a year.
They do work. I've been there for
probably in a year. I've had one that didn't work, and I took it back and they just replaced it.
I had one I got from a big box store, and it didn't work.
Right. It's
not a guarantee either way, but you get superior customer service.
And the other thing I've started is gardening, which, it's one of those things.
I know. That's why you're ahead of me. It's like, dude, what do you mean you're going to have a garden?
Yeah. So no, I just, you know, we can talk about that more in another show, but
there's
all these things I've been doing and it's been a great journey.
This is Scott's journey of travel in the green world. Okay. Everybody, thank you so much, Scott, for coming in.
Thank you.
And just, you can get in touch with Scott, legendaryworld.com or MrsGreensWorld.com, and we will hook you up. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And I just have to add one thing. Another thing that Scott is so great about is he is my Facebook buddy for Mrs. Green, and I'm now obsessive about Facebook fan page. And as of this morning, I was at 792 fans. So if you are a Facebook person, please go and fan Mrs. Green, because I want to get to 800 before I get home. So it's pretty funny that we keep texting each other for the numbers going up.
We'll try recruiting for you.
You guys, I know you're the young people. I'm going to count on it before I get out of here. Okay, we have a caller on the line who has a question for Lon. Hank, thanks for calling in today.
Hello, Mrs. Green.
Thanks for waiting.
Hello, Lon. It's Hank.
Hey, Hank.
I just have a question to ask in regards to the university. What are some of the energy efficiency projects that are being implemented?
Well, right now we're looking at LED lighting. And we're looking at different types of motion or thermal sensor lighting. So, for instance, in the student union, the lights in the bathroom are on 24/7. Well, we can't have motion sensor lighting in the bathrooms, just in case someone's in there for a little bit of time, right? We don't want to shut the lights off on them. So we have thermal sensor lighting in the bathrooms, and then motion sensor in some of the offices. So that's a few things. Also upgrading HVAC systems, and other ways, so that squeezes more out of the resources. So, for instance, with water, we looked into designing a water filtration system that actually allowed the UA to use more of the water instead of having to throw it out, and filtered it. So energy efficiency, water efficiency, we're looking at everything.
Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for calling in, Hank. Okay. Let's go on to a little bit more about, I want to move in a little bit more to the solar arena, because I think there's controversy around solar and about the water use and things like that. You go to different camps and you hear different things about it's not practical, it's too expensive, blah, blah, blah. But you guys have a lot of hope. So in terms of the commitment to sustainability, segue for us, Lon, into the next best thing that you feel that is the role of the campus sustainability initiative.
Sure.
Especially as it relates to solar. I really want to know where you see that going.
Okay, well, let me try to tie that in to the solar dorm example. And you know, Mark, you can chime in on this. But, you know, the best thing about solar is it provides a hedge against rising electricity costs. And so with this project that we got underway in the dorm, the savings are actually going to be, it's about probably $5,000 a year, is going to be refunded back into the SAGE fund or in the student fund to carry out more projects.
Can you just tell us what SAGE stands for? Is it an
acronym? Yeah, Students Advancing Green Enterprise.
Okay,
and it's also SAGE, the original colors of UA and everything. So, so essentially, you know, the solar's on there, producing electricity using, you know, no water, avoiding emissions from coal, and the savings go back to the students, and the dorm residence life, they get a fixed rate of electricity for the life of the system, which is often 30 years. So, you know, what I like about that project is that the students involved had real-world experience where they could go out, leave the university, and they could go to a solar company, for instance, and they could say, hey, you know what, I was involved in this project. I know some of the hurdles, and I think, Mark, you know, you can hit on
absolutely
a few of the ones.
And
that
there are many hurdles to overcome, but, you know, a great thing about doing and being in the nascent phase of development, you know, this whole student sustainability initiative is that we're able to develop different methods to streamline the process from just being on the drawing board to then working with procurement to be able to make sure we don't have any liability issues, contracting with different local installers and manufacturers to actually get the hardware that we need to implement a system like this. And then, moreover, I mean, then there's lots that we have to do with regard to calculating what kind of payback that we can expect from the system, and just working with structural engineers even, just to make sure that when we put this thing on a roof, that it doesn't collapse it, right? I mean,
that's
not going to be good news for solar, right?
So many pieces of it. It's just for the homeowner, they just come and install solar.
Yeah, exactly.
What you guys are looking at is all of those pieces. You talk about real-life experience. You're in – it's one of the things that excites me the most, the real-life world, getting ready for the real-life world and not just having the – not just being really in the lab in a vacuum. We do have another caller. I love to take callers. Bob, you're on the air. Air conditioning efficiency.
Yeah, hello?
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. My question is this. I agree with your experts there that efficiencies tend to drop off as temperature goes up, and nothing's truer than air conditioning. Out here in Arizona, we can lose about 30% of your efficiency as your condenser temperature goes up to about 130, 140. That's typical of this area. And I just wondered if you guys have been thinking about, since air conditioning accounts for 80% of most people's cooling electrical bills in the summertime, if you guys are actively looking at ways to improve efficiencies or reduce your cooling needs.
That's a great question. Who's going to field
that
one?
You know, I can definitely start the process for that. So anyway, you know, the U of A, in a lot of the work that I've done specifically doing this solar initiative here, is working with facilities management. And they have a lot of smaller projects that they do to help increase the efficiency of the campus. But I think their shining example that they cite all the time is the chilling units that they have. You know, the campus has multiple facilities that are just basically filled with ice boxes. And during the low peak energy usage times of the day, so we're talking the nighttime, early morning, that kind of thing, they actually will use excess energy to freeze water. And then during the hottest parts of the day, they will actually, you know, take the basically cold air that can be generated from this ice and then just shunt it all across the university, cooling that way. So, you know, they do, by implementing that kind of system, the peak energy demand for the campus gets decreased significantly. And that can not only help with reducing the costs of the electricity you have to spend, because during peak times you have to.
One of the things I was just going to mention, very few manufacturers of air conditioners designed for the Southwest, because it's such a small market when you look at the entire United States. We're kind of out there on the edge of the curve if you look at the design factors. We're using pre-cooling, evapo-pre-cooling to pre-cool our air-cooled condensers, and we've actually reduced the energy on the bill by 25% in August, and that only cost us about 100 or 200 gallons of water to do that. So there are ways, simple ways, you know, people can vastly decrease their energy. And I would just say, you know, Dillinger said, why do you rob banks? And he says, that's where the money is. Well, you know, air conditioning is where the power is, because about 60% of our energy use is just to cool residential and commercial buildings, and we're not doing a very good job. Thank you.
And Bob, I would really like to hear from you. It would be great. I'd love it if you'd send me an email, Gina at Mrs. Green's World, to hear more about that, because you sound like you'd be a great show guest. And actually, that whole piece was about I went on a tour when you had something for AZ Rise. It was something you invited me to, Lon, and one of the architects took me and showed me how much water they're collecting from the condensation from air conditioning units and reusing that. So they're really trying to use that efficiency. And I did know about the ice boxes and the way that they do that, and it offsets. So that it's just the creative ways to ultimately always bring down the cost. This is News Talk 790 KNST. Time is flying. We're having fun. Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream. We'll be back in just a minute.
790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. News Talk 790 KNST, Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream. Two exciting future. They see the future, and it is them. We have Lon Huber and Mark Scholin from the University of Arizona, going on to different wonderful careers. We have another caller. There's a lot of interest in this, as reflected by the number of callers, 880-5678-520 area code. Jeff, what's your question? Jeff is maybe calling back. Okay, I got a dial tone, so let's go on. Let's talk about solar.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a really important question I want to ask you about solar, so go.
Okay, well, you know, solar, I think, is is really one of the most diverse and ever-changing types of clean technology, and I really see a lot of potential for it, obviously, especially in the Southwest. From a large power plant in the desert to little solar panels on your backpack or on the roof of your car, your house, or they can build it into your shingles. It's so dynamic that I really feel it can play a big role in our energy future.
Okay, the question becomes, there are two things that come up a lot sure. in my world. One is cost, and we talked about it a little bit, that it can be cost prohibitive at this time.
Right.
The other one is, I think one of the biggest is for to produce photovoltaics, to produce the actual, the equipment, to install solar, that it is an extreme drain on the water systems, which is another, it uses lots of water to produce it. Mm. What's your response to that, Lon?
Well, there's a few misconceptions about solar out there. One is cost. The reason why it seems so expensive is because essentially you're paying 30 years worth of electricity and at one time, right when you send that check, that's 30 years worth of electricity.
Right.
So all the cost is front-loaded. But if you look at the levelized cost of electricity for solar, it's actually on par with other forms of comparable electricity production. And so you have to be careful. You have to compare apples to apples. There's different forms of energy production. There's base load, which is on 24/7. It's usually cheaper. And then there's intermediate, and then there's peak. And so peaking forms of electricity are often more expensive. That's when you get to your natural gas. And solar, especially recently with the dramatic price declines in the cost of modules, is right on par with natural gas peaking facilities. So it's really not more expensive, but you just have to be sure to compare it apples to apples, a new solar facility versus a new coal facility or a new natural gas, not a new solar facility to a 1970s coal plant. Right.
So we know how much that costs, and we know what the hidden costs are
right.
to the air.
And then you've
breathing.
Got the hidden costs. So
yep.
that's, you know, you have to look at the whole picture and see, you know, where are the direct costs, where are those hidden costs, and compare it.
But you hit on something that is really true. You said it's paying for 30 years of electricity in one time. And that's what is the barrier, as far as I'm concerned,
exactly.
because most people in the United States, as much as they would love it, can't do it. So the segue for me is TEP is one of my clients. Mm-hmm. I try to stay on top of all of the things they're doing aggressively to develop and to encourage the use of alternative energy sources. So one thing that's on the drawing board is the new community solar that they're going to develop in the next couple of years. And what, from what I understand, someone like me will be able to say, okay, this is how much my bill is, and I want $15 of my bill to come from solar. And it will be a little bit higher. That charge for use will be a little bit higher. What about concepts like that? That makes mm-hmm. my conscience feel good. It's a step in the right direction. Until the cost of solar comes, what's your take on that? Is that a good step going in the right direction?
Yeah, I'm a fan of any innovative way to get solar
above.
Out, right?
Yeah.
And
right.
and you know, I see there's great value in having it actually on your roof. But for renters out there, for people in apartments, for people with the wrong type of say roof structure, a community solar program would be great, right? And although you might be paying a little bit of a premium as currently outlined in TEP's proposal, that will fix that portion of your electricity for 10 to 20 years. So although it might be a little bit more
That's
expensive
right.
in the
That's
first
right.
5 to 7 years, maybe, after that, you're going to be coming ahead because it's going to fix that portion of your electricity bill.
And you kind of skated by that in one of our other segments previously.
Yeah.
But when people really get that, I wanted to come back to it, get their head around when you're able to stabilize your electricity bill when things are going up, up, up. And that's why I truthfully encourage people to go to Chapman and buy an Insight because I get 44 miles a gallon now. And so gas
right.
is going to go up. If you don't think that, you're living in a cave.
There's an economic case as well as an environmental case for pursuing, you know, green technology.
It's all the more relevant given what kind of volatility we're experiencing
right.
in all the markets. Right
and,
now.
And, you know, you can, for a solar PV system, you're looking at about an 8 to 9% rate of return on your money. Now, what can you get for a CD in the bank right now, right?
Not that. And, trust
and
me.
So, You know, you can. There's a lot of different dimensions to it, but earlier you hit on that issue of, you know, that front-loaded cost and you know, the financing of it. The largest barrier I see to widespread solar adoption is actually financing. You know, how do you overcome those high upfront costs, especially in a time when you've got really tight, you know, credit standards, banks are scared to lend. So really, if we can crack that nut, that's the key. And that involves strong advocacy for public policy that's smart and allows people to overcome that high upfront barrier.
I'd like to ask you guys a question before we run out of time. 5 years down the road, or maybe even 10, what percentage of electricity do you think, of power, do you think will be generated by solar with the technology that is yet to even be announced? Do you see it as a 5%, 3%, 10%? Are we ever going to get to 20%? I mean, 1% moving in that direction is significant to get off the dependency on coal. What do you guys, what's your crystal ball telling you, your solar crystal ball?
Well, you know, it's always dangerous to make projections down the line because there's so many.
But everybody will forget that we even said it.
All right. Okay. Well, off the record, even though we're broadcasting the unfold,
I love that. This is off the
numbers. You know, I have an optimistic view about all alternative energies, whether it be solar or anything bio-related. The public there's an ever-increasing shift in our society, in my opinion, as younger people are becoming more educated. There's just an explosion of interest in learning about sustainability and green energy in colleges all across the campus, or all across the country,
Right.
So to give you a number, you know, I'd like to say see it, you know, as high as 20% in that kind of short time frame, you know, 5, 10 years. Yeah, yeah. What about you, Lauren?
Well, you know, the ACC, Arizona Corporation Commission, you know, mandated that Arizona utilities hit 15% by 2025. I think with the current price declines, I think we could even do better than that. But, you know, we'll have to see, and we'll also have to look at some of the issues that solar does have. So, you know, I talked about misconceptions. Well, there are actual issues with solar, and one of it is intermittency. What happens when a cloud goes overhead? What happens when, you know, at night, right?
Right. So, I want my shower.
Right.
I want my shower on
but,
demand.
You know, go ahead.
Well, you know, so the thing is we have to look at grid stability. We have to look at how solar interacts when it hits certain grid penetration levels. But if you do it right and you have smart grid technology, you can get really high penetration levels with solar. And you know, you can really make it work.
And then with the ever advancing technologies related to energy storage, you know, solar and energy storage go hand in hand simply because there is a big issue with the fact that solar produces zero kilowatt hours of energy at night. So storage is a huge thing, too, with solar. And there's lots of innovation going on everywhere.
Everything I read, and I have to say, I just have to do a little stand for the elders. I think the bright young minds are the future. I think people in my demographic are really demanding more choices. We are waking up. That's why there is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream. I want to do more things right every day because I realize there's not an infinite number of possibilities. I know it's had an impact on my family. My children have had an impact on me. My grandchildren have. So I think it's getting to the tipping point where people are saying, we get it. It's not if you're for or against global warming. It's about preservation of the planet. And I think there are more and more and more people. And I think business and researchers, everything I'm reading, huge research groups are polling people and saying, what do you care about? They care a lot about energy. They care a lot about food, story for another day, about pesticides and insecticides and genetic modification. And so I think there's a lot of us, these wonderful forward-thinking elders that are soon to be 60. I'll be announcing my birthday a lot when it's closer. But I think it's and people like you give me hope. Well, you give me hope that my trust is there, and let's get going.
And, you know, I would hope that we could, down the line, foster a greater partnership between up-and-comers like ourselves who really have a lot of energy and a lot of will to get this done, and the older generation who has that wealth of experience, I think.
And the wealth.
Right. And the wealth.
And the wealth.
Exactly.
Seriously, the people that really have it, you said some private donors. they want to help and they want to find ways to do it. And investing in an organization like Sage, to me, is like, it's golden.
Sagefund.arizona.edu.
Sagefund.arizona.edu. Well, you guys are great, and obviously there was interest from the callers. A great show. I'm sure we'll have you back.
Yeah.
Mark, we never even got to talk about what you're going to be doing, which is another extremely interesting field of interest.
Sure, we'll.
Yeah.
So
we got to have another show, because I got to address that water issue that you brought up still.
And believe me, Lon, everybody does what Lon tells them. We do what Lon tells us to do, because he just does not take no for an answer. I do want to do a shout out for the Arizona Green Times. It's called The New Southwest, and you really need to pick up a copy of it. We are blessed to have a publication like that. I see it everywhere, and I'm glad to have them as our partner. Great weekend. News Talk 790 KNS team. Mrs. Green goes mainstream. Check me out at mrsgreensworld.com. Thank you, Lon and Mark.
Thank you, Pleasure.
Thanks.
Been listening to Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream on News Talk 790 KNST, all about learning that going green can be fun. Visit MrsGreenGoesMainstream.com and tune in next Saturday at noon for Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream on News Talk 790 KNST.